southwest winds up to 25 with lows tonight around 10 below. It's 6 o'clock.
Good morning. Public pressure forced the Trump administration to back off its false claims about a shooting. A few Republicans made it clear they'd seen the video. We'll talk with a Minnesota Republican on Morning Edition from NPR News. The administration spread the narrative that Alex Preti was a terrorist. I'm Michelle Martin.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. Pro-Trump media outlets repeated that narrative at first. David Falkenflik reports how video evidence forced them to change. Also, the Winter Olympics come next month. Some Americans will have the advantage of competing in past Olympics. It's Tuesday, January 27th. This day in 1880, Thomas Edison received a patent for the incandescent electric lamp. Eventually, he came up with a shorter name. Apparently, a light bulb turned on over his head. The news is next.
Live from NPR News, I'm Corva Coleman. The Trump administration is moving a top Border Patrol officer out of Minneapolis and out of his leadership role. Greg Bovino has been the face of the Trump administration's immigration efforts across the country. Minnesota Governor Tim Walz says he spoke with President Trump. Walz says Trump told him he's sending his border czar to Minneapolis instead.
He pledged that, look, I'm going to send Tom Holman in. We'll do things differently. He explained to me how he thought it was very successful in Louisiana, very successful in Louisville, which I shared with him, but ICE did not shoot anybody there, and the presence was much smaller and much more targeted.
The governor spoke with Minnesota Public Radio. Separately, a federal judge has ordered the acting head of ICE to appear in a courtroom in Minnesota Friday. He wants to know if Todd Lyons should be held in contempt. The judge says ICE has disobeyed his order to release a detained man or give him a bond hearing. President Trump is leaving for Iowa this morning, where he's looking to recapture the narrative. NPR's Franco Ordonez reports Trump hopes to turn the page to his economic agenda as his administration faces backlash over his immigration crackdown.
The White House says the trip is the beginning of what will soon be weekly travel ahead of the midterm elections. But veteran strategist Ryan Williams says clearly Trump is looking to wrestle back the national conversation after a second death at the hands of federal agents.
The primary news story at the moment isn't just the ICE-related shooting, it's the response to the ICE-related shooting. That's what's going to be the focus. And the president can attempt to focus on the economy, on what he views are successes of his administration on the economic front. But he's going to be stuck talking about this issue for a significant period of time.
Some Republicans are calling for further investigations and questioning Trump's broader goals with the crackdown. Franco Ordonez, NPR News.
More than 500,000 power customers still lack electricity after a mammoth winter storm hit much of the country over the weekend. The worst affected state is still Tennessee. From member station WPLN, Rose Gilbert reports from Nashville, much of that city is still without power.
And with temperatures dipping into the single digits at night, officials have warned that the cold could be life-threatening for those without heat. Lots of people are looking for a place to stay, and hotels are filling up fast. Breland Burham and his family checked into a Nashville hotel Sunday afternoon. While holding his one-year-old son in the lobby, he says he's here for the same reason as everyone else.
Just heat, and I'm keeping food cold and trying to find him something to eat, unless he wanted to eat gazpacho.
At least four people in Tennessee have died in the winter storm. More than 100 warming stations have opened across the state. For NPR News, I'm Rose Gilbert in Nashville.
On Wall Street and pre-market trading, Dow futures are lower. This is NPR. Policymakers for the Federal Reserve will open their two-day policy meeting today in Washington, D.C. At issue is short-term interest rates. President Trump has been heavily pressuring the Federal Reserve to cut these rates. His administration has also launched an investigation into testimony that Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell gave to Congress. Powell issued a public statement this month saying he would not give in to pressure and would continue to act in the public interest. Social media apps have long been accused of harming children. Now a jury in Los Angeles will hear these claims. NPR Shannon Bond reports on a trial opening there today.
The case in California state court is the first in a wave of lawsuits against social media companies brought by more than 1,000 individuals, school districts, and state attorneys general. They accuse the companies of designing their apps to be nearly impossible for kids to put down, leading to mental health problems. Jurors in the Los Angeles trial will be presented with thousands of pages of internal documents from Meta, YouTube, and TikTok. They'll also hear from the teenage plaintiff and executives, including Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg. The companies dispute the claims and say a direct link between social media and mental health problems has not been proven. Shannon Bond, NPR News.
Meanwhile, lawmakers in France's lower house have approved a bill today banning social media for children younger than 15. The measure now goes to the French Senate. The action comes after Australia banned social media for children and young teens. Lawmakers say they're worried about children's health. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Sony Pictures Classics, presenting A Private Life, starring Jodie Foster as a psychiatrist who investigates the sudden death of one of her patients as a possible murder. Now playing select cities, opens wide Friday.
KAXE is people-powered radio. Here's a poem written for John Latimer from Prairie Creek Community School in Northfield.
I never noticed how
fawns jump, fox kids play,
a bald eagle perches,
peat color hits,
a murmuration of birds cover the sky and a flapping of wings.
I'm mesmerized,
excited to watch.
Sometimes the littlest things are best.
Noticing the clouds,
the wildflower in my backyard,
the changing leaves,
the hidden mushroom,
the birds singing their usual song.
My backyard holds generations.
All the little things gather into one big thing, a season.
When I was small, I didn't notice.
Now I ask questions. I pay attention.
I look delicately.
I welcome the spring's first heron.
I say goodbye to the fall's last dragonfly.
I have a whole new way to see the world.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Michelle Martin. Good morning. The Trump administration has, at least for now, made some changes to its mass deportation campaign in Minnesota.
The administration removed Greg Bovino, the Border Patrol official who was the public face of the immigration operation. He's going to return to a previous job in California, and Border Czar Tom Holman will replace him. The administration has also stopped repeating its false narrative about a shooting without actually retracting any of the false claims. And President Trump called Tim Walz, the governor he previously blamed for the shooting by federal agents on a snowy street. In a moment, we'll hear what a Republican state representative from Minnesota thinks about all this. We begin with the facts.
Joining us from Minneapolis with the latest is reporter Matt Sepik of Minnesota Public Radio. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning.
So we understand that Greg Bovino is no longer leading the Border Patrol. What have you heard about that move?
Bovino was the commander at large of the agency. He's made himself visible on the streets during operations here in Minnesota and elsewhere. Governor Tim Walz says Bovino is leaving Minnesota. Now he's returning to his old post in California and is expected to retire soon. This is effectively a demotion because he's no longer leading the administration's multi-state operation.
And President Trump spoke by phone with both Minnesota Governor Tim Walz and Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey. What do we know about those calls?
On social media, the president said that he had a, quote, very good telephone conversation with the mayor. Frey said Trump agreed that the present situation cannot continue, and Governor Walz says the president seemed earnest.
Whatever has happened here, there is a definite change of tone. There is a definitely a more collaborative tone. I want to make sure that I'm not jeopardizing that I'm going to take them for their word right now.
Walz says Trump agreed to consider reducing the number of federal agents here and allow state police to investigate the killings of Renee Macklin Good on January 7th and Alex Preddy on Saturday.
And this has been a big point of contention. We've talked about this a number of times. So is the state taking part in any investigations?
There is little that state police can do without their federal counterparts, and there's still no indication whether the feds are cooperating. After Good was killed, the Department of Homeland Security blocked Minnesota's Bureau of Criminal Apprehension from investigating. Then Saturday, DHS refused to let the BCA access the area where Preddy was killed, even after the state got a search warrant. A judge ordered the feds not to destroy any evidence. That order remains in place even as the Justice Department challenges it. In court yesterday, Assistant U.S. Attorney Fred Siekert argued that the feds are already preserving the evidence, but State Attorney Peter Farrell said he's not so sure because top administration officials called Preddy a domestic terrorist within hours of his death.
So it seems like a lot of things are coming to head in federal court. Where do things stand with Minnesota's effort to halt the operation altogether?
During a hearing yesterday, state attorneys argued that the presence of so many federal agents in Minnesota is overwhelming local public safety resources. They also say the Justice Department is extorting the state. They pointed to a letter that Attorney General Pam Bondi sent to Walz on Saturday in which she demands that Minnesota hand over its voter rolls. The DOJ calls the lawsuit frivolous and says the federal government has the right to enforce immigration laws. In yet another case, Minnesota's chief federal judge, Patrick Schultz, has ordered acting ICE director Todd Lyons to appear personally in court here on Friday. Schultz says the agency has failed to comply with dozens of orders to provide hearings for people who are alleging that they are being unlawfully detained. Schultz writes, quote, the court's patience is at an end.
So, Matt, before we let you go, give us a sense of the mood in Minneapolis.
People are continuing to mourn the deaths of Renee Macklin Good and now Alex Preddy with protests and vigils. And despite the apparent detente, thousands of masked agents remain, and many residents are seeking some sort of assurance that the killings will get a proper investigation.
That's Matt Sepik of Minnesota Public Radio. Matt, thank you.
You're welcome.
Some people who voted for President Trump have been horrified by the video from Minnesota. We heard elsewhere in today's program about a focus group of Trump voters from 2024 who've turned against his immigration policy. They'd seen the video. They knew it frame by frame. In Minnesota, Republican candidate for governor dropped out to show his objection to that policy. And Republican Nolan West joins us next from Minnesota. He is a state representative, and his district includes some of the Twin Cities' northern suburbs. Welcome to the program, sir.
Thanks for having me on.
I noticed that you put out a statement over the weekend calling for an end to the federal immigration operation in Minnesota. Did you have some personal experience that motivated you to say that?
Oh, so that was the day of my one-year-old's birthday, and my wife was going to pick up a cake from Baker on the very street where Preddy was shot. Minutes after it happened, as she was leaving, droves of protesters were showing up. And it took her like an extra 20 minutes to get home.
And how did that affect you when you heard that story?
Well, I was already looking at the situation with resounding depression, let's say. I mean, when you see this happening in your own state, and somewhat again after it happened recently, it's just hurts. And when it affects your family's safety, and, you know, honestly, I was more concerned about the protesters and her safety than the ICE agents posing any threat to her.
Understood.
But it was still, like, a horrible situation, and knowing it's an ongoing situation, and the only way to stop it, I see, is the federal government to do something.
Would you have been in support of the way the president has been enforcing immigration law up to the last month or two in Minnesota?
Well, I think there's broad support for deporting illegal immigrants who have committed an actual crime or are charged with drug or murder or something, a violent crime like that. The idea that we're going to deport every single one was never, like, it's shocking that that seems like it was even attempted because, you know, our immigration system has been broken for so many years that was never going to be something doable without, well, one, violence, and two, economic calamity, because significant parts of our economy, especially in agriculture, depend on them.
I want to be clear, the Trump administration has constantly given multiple messages on this. We were told during the campaign, first, we're going to get rid of the criminals, which it sounds like you completely support and which most Americans would support. But then they kept adding to the numbers, increasing the numbers, saying actually it's 11 million, maybe 15 million, maybe 20 million. A few weeks ago, the Department of Homeland Security talked about 100 million deportations, which of course is far more than the number of people without legal status in the entire United States. Was there something of a bait and switch, or just inviting people to believe what they wanted to what they liked?
Well, I mean, there's always a difference between any presidential candidate's campaign and their administration. It happens with every single administration. I can't speak to their motives, but I would like them to stick to a more refined approach that doesn't capture, that doesn't have any of these situations where they, you know, even just detain a U.S. citizen is unacceptable.
I want to take a little bit of extra time and talk about what the administration has said over the last several days and get your thoughts about it. As you know very well, the Trump administration got its say on this, referred to Mr. Preti, your fellow citizen, as a domestic terrorist, said that he had brandished a gun when video clearly showed that he did not brandish a gun. Lots of other things were said, saying that he wanted to do maximum damage to immigration agents and so forth. Now we have an opportunity to hear from the other side. A friend of Alex Preti was on All Things Considered, the NPR program yesterday. Scott Detrow spoke with Heather Zielinski. He's a friend of this nurse, this ICU nurse. And here's some of their conversation.
I want to ask what you thought when you heard Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem call Alex Preti a domestic terrorist, or top White House aide Stephen Miller call him a would-be assassin.
Liars, traitors, cowards.
And she went on to say a little more.
He was nothing like what the people you just named said. He was an American citizen. He was a good man. He was a hard worker. And he cared for people.
What do you think of the way the administration has handled this incident once it happened?
I mean, it obviously was a complete disaster. For one, when you speak in these situations, you don't speak for yourself. You speak for the organization you represent. And I'd have no idea why it wasn't so hard not to say, you know, this is a active investigation. We're going to investigate, get to the bottom of it, and we have no comment at this time. And then actually investigate it and cooperate with state investigators. It was absolutely horrifying to see. I'm glad it looks like there's a corner being turned with the conversations between Governor Walz and President Trump, and bringing in Tom Homan as somebody who doesn't have a bunch of statements that they refuse to retract. So I'm optimistic that we're trending in the right direction now, but the response was terrible.
What do you want from your state's Democratic governor now, Governor Walz, who did speak with President Trump?
Well, I would like to see him meaningfully compromise. Like, both sides have been really dug in. One of the things that caused this, outside of just having federal agents here, is local law enforcement, state patrol were pulled from providing protection for them, which created a lot of these opportunities for ICE agents who are not properly trained for this kind of stuff to engage with protesters. And that, you know, that helped create this situation. So what I would like to see is, okay, you have to get less ICE agents on the street. Like, that's his position. He wants them all. Let's make sure the federal government takes them out, and they can do that if you help them enforce a more targeted approach. And that's what I would like to see.
And I guess we'll just note for the record, we've heard differing statements about whether police have said they're withdrawing from DHS or whether DHS isn't giving them information. But in any case, you are correct that in this incident and so many others, it's DHS people not trained for crowd control who are doing crowd control and a little more. Representative, thanks for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Nolan West is a Republican state representative in Minnesota who has called for federal immigration agents to pull back. This is NPR News.
morning at 6:19, and you are tuned in to The Morning Show here on KAXE and KBXE. We are people-powered radio in northern Minnesota. Thank you for supporting us, and thanks to our business supporters like Lady Sippers NA Bottle Shop in downtown Deer River, Itasca County's only NA bottle shop, offering ready-to-drink options, ingredients for craft cocktails, gifts, and more. Info available at ladysippers.com. And thanks also goes out to Paul Bunyan Communications. They offer technology for businesses, including cloud solutions, cybersecurity services, network management, and more, all with local customer service and support. Paul Bunyan Communications, Northern Minnesota's local broadband cooperative. Coming up today at 1 o'clock, we bring you On the River. That's our volunteer-hosted program. It is today, it's DJ Ironsides at 1, and tonight at 7, it is Sarah. We've got Headwaters coming up at 9 o'clock today with DJ Ding. You can check out KAXE.org for the latest news from our region and our state, including a story on how the Minnesota Department of Corrections has established a new website to combat misinformation coming from the Department of Homeland Security. Keep an eye out for a photo gallery of last Saturday's vigil in Brainerd at the Crow Wing County Jail to protest the more than 40 ICE detainees. Go to KAXE.org. More news is next.
Word for NPR comes from the station. And from Luminescence Foundation. Luminescence Foundation is dedicated to shedding light on neurological research focused on Alzheimer's and Parkinson's diseases and supporting land conservation initiatives. From Imaginable Futures, funding programs in the U.S. with the goal of ensuring young children and their parents get the education they need to thrive. Learn more at imaginablefutures.com. From the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people. Online at wtgrantfoundation.org. And from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation at macfound.org.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin.
I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Leila Fadel. When the film Atropia starts, it seems like a standard war movie set in Iraq circa 2007. But pretty soon you learn it's a comedy. And it's not Iraq at all. It takes place closer to Burbank than Baghdad. You see, for training purposes, the U.S. military has built these massive simulations of the countries where it's at war, so new troops can run war games and get familiar with this fake version of the terrain and the people. In the film, Atropia is a stand-in for Iraq.
Here, you will be tested in a vast immersive training area spanning 600,000 acres of the California desert. What sets us apart is our proximity to Hollywood, which means we've got the best in the business.
And that's where we meet Fairuz, played by Alia Shaukat.
She is an actress, and she takes her job very seriously. She is Iraqi, but she's American. She works there to play one of the Iraqi civilians during war to help make it as realistic as possible, but she takes her job just a little more seriously than everybody else.
She has quite the air of desperation about her.
Yes. Like any good actress really does.
You have a great part today. Mustard gas chemist is a great part.
Yeah, only if the soldiers find me. I mean, think about it, Jerry. I could be stuck twiddling my thumbs in my little bomb-making room while my entire future passes me by.
And before we really get started, I ask about her name, because my instinct as a Lebanese-American is to say it the Arabic way. How do you say your name? Because I have this...
Alia, actually.
Alia. Alia Shaukat?
Mm-hmm. Alia Shaukat, yeah.
Because I kept wanting to say Alia Shaukat, but that's not right.
I mean, that's right. That's the Arabic way to say it. You can say it that way. I mean, that's like the battle of my life. It's like, I'm like, well, if you want to say it the real way, it's Alia Shaukat.
Like her character, Alia Shaukat is an Iraqi-American actress, though she hasn't struggled to find work since her days playing Maybe on Arrested Development. Her character, Fairuz, is really into this job in Atropia, but she's also struggling to make peace with it. Here's another clip.
Do you know what I've given up to be here? My passions? My career? Hell, half of my family won't even speak to me because of what I do here.
I'm just wondering why she does what she does when it's part of an invasion of the country where her family ultimately hailed from.
I think that to her, this is what she knows how to do, but she was only given so many opportunities. So obviously this isn't her first class choice to be recreating a war to people who nobody's watching. But I think with the circumstances she was given, she kind of was like, I'm right casting for this, you know? And even personally, myself, at a certain time too, is like I was only getting cast for anything that was ethnically, you know, appropriate.
Yeah.
God forbid I'm just like a regular girl. They have to be like, no, we have to explain why she looks like that. And in a lot of these war movies, you know, it's a hard thing to make a critique war film, because you can never really make a true anti-war film if you show the war, because inevitably it looks very cool and brave, you know? But in our case, it looks really silly. You're actually showing the other side of it and going, this is ridiculous. So the idea is that this film is actually a true anti-war comedy of showing how flimsy our war system is.
Your dad's in the movie with you, right?
Yeah, so my father plays the mayor, and he was, you know, born and raised in Iraq and didn't come over till he was in his 20s into the States. Yeah.
So you're in the car with him, you're struggling with a lot of things, your interesting romance in the film, your flailing acting career, whether you should stay or go at this facility, and he looks over at you and he tells you, look,
we're helping a group of teenagers to invade our homeland in a gentler way.
That line, how did that land for you? It felt like it was such a complicated justification for why Iraqi Americans were involved here.
Totally. I mean, you know, now obviously looking back, it's heartbreaking, you know, on such a big scale. Because I even remember when the U.S. invaded Iraq for the first time and my father having this hope, slightly naive maybe, but hope that they would take this dictator and they would change things. And I think that war also, the lies about the WMDs, it set the stage in a way for the world we live in, where there's just no trust in our governments and institutions. That was kind of the first, like, he lied about that? And everyone's like, anyways, carry on.
Right. I mean, it also takes quite a few swipes at your own industry, right, of acting.
Oh, yeah.
And how seriously, I mean,
my
there's...
My favorite.
Yeah. I mean, let's talk about that, because there's this scene where you're trying to get your break, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a famous actor comes onto the facility.
Yeah. I mean, I think every actor, whether they want to admit it or not, has had that that moment of like, this person's going to come here and he's going to see me. I mean, a lot of the work I did, not to sound too actory, but anyways, on this character was about the urge to be seen. Feyruz's desire just to be seen, just somebody see me, is so real in all of us, you know, whether you're an actor or not, just to be deemed valuable, you know, like you're worthy. But yeah, I mean, in our industry, we're just, you see amazing, talented actors and everyone's just putting it on, you know, slapping on the lipstick and the dresses and being like, look at me. I mean, it's not a cool industry. Like, people are just desperate to be seen and hope they get another job and hope they're the prettiest and the cutest girl in all the land. You know, it's just like, it's a deep belly of insecurity.
I mean, it is a satire, but in many ways, it's making such a serious statement, right, about war, the military-industrial complex. It also gets into, like, these anti-Muslim, anti-Arab tropes that were just being thrown around post-9/11 and continue to be. I mean, what do you think the larger message of this film is beyond just being a funny, enjoyable watch?
You know, I think this quote, this Molière quote that says, the duty of comedy is to correct men by amusing them. I think it's important to remember, like, how messed up our country is, I guess. You know, like, and to be poking fun at the king, because we're also in a very scary time right now where even doing that is having risks. And to me, I think the power of an artist is to mock the king, always. There has to be a playfulness to being like, look how ridiculous this is. Let's not forget, because the darkness under here is real. You know, horror and comedy just kind of go hand in hand. So, yeah, I mean, I hope people laugh and also leave there going, there's a lot of truth and pain in comedy.
That's Anya Shaukat. She stars in the movie Atropia. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Layla.
This is NPR News.
George Saunders' new novel, Vigil, takes place at the deathbed of an oil tycoon visited by a parade of spirits. Some want for him to atone, and some simply want to bring him comfort.
The book is kind of a contemplation about how do we actually help somebody.
I'm Scott Detrow. Saunders on why he keeps revisiting death on All Things Considered from NPR News.
It is 6:30 coming up later today. You can catch the news of the afternoon with All Things Considered at 4 o'clock here on People Powered KEXE. And then from the Canadian perspective, it is As It Happens. That begins at 6 o'clock. 7 o'clock tonight, it is our volunteer-hosted On the River program. Allie and Isaac are our hosts tonight. Now, they're not names I necessarily know. Might be in the new class. So
Allie and Isaac.
Here's a name we know, though. 1 o'clock today, volunteer host is Dave Peterson.
Oh.
Good old Dave's coming in.
Warm up the chair. Dave's coming in. All right. Coming up from Boy River Country.
That's right. That's John Latimer. I'm Heidi Holton. It is Tuesday morning. Thank you for being here with us. We've got a lot going on for you to get you connected to nature. And, you know, this is a really good time. A couple weeks ago, our phenology coordinator, Charlie Mitchell, in the newsletter that they write, Season Watch, had a whole thing about how during these times, nature can make a huge difference.
Looking at the sky,
you know.
Absolutely.
The news is overwhelming, especially if you live in the state of Minnesota, and we are gathering stories all this week. That's our question of the week. Maybe it's the music that gets you through. Maybe it's student voices. Let us know. Text 218-326-1234.
Outside of the shrieking tinnitus in my ears, it's the silence that gets me through. I like quiet. And this last week, I pretty much disappeared into the woods, and I realized this morning as I was driving in that this is the first time in a week that I've left home and gone anywhere.
Yeah.
It was cold, and I didn't have to go anywhere. I had enough food in the freezer. And
right.
Took it out so it would thaw, and I hoped it would thaw. Yeah, there was ice on the waters on the dog's water dish, and that's inside the house. So
oh, okay.
it was cold.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't enough ice to like stop the dog. She just punched her nose through it, but there was ice on it. It was right. It sits right by the door. So
sure.
It is.
Sure.
And the entryway is closed off from the rest of the house by another couple of doors. So. It's a sort of a tempering room, you know. The cold air comes in there and gets a chance to warm up before it comes into the house, or at least that's the plan.
Mm-hmm.
And some of that cold air, you know, it put a little skim ice on the dog's water dish. So I knew it was cold out, but I've seen colder.
Yep.
You know, I got to thinking about this, and this is really a conversation to have with Bob, and I'll probably reprise it for that moment, but when I was a kid, weather prediction was so inaccurate that you just dealt with the weather as it came. You didn't have like somebody, you know, on the TV or on the radio telling you that extreme cold was coming, you know, terror.
Mm-hmm.
And you just did. You know, you got up and you went to school. I remember getting up one morning. I lived a little bit south of town, kind of down by where the Chevrolet garage is. It's about a 2-mile walk to school. And I used to walk every morning. And one morning I went out, and it was pretty darn cold. And I no more than got to the highway, and somebody pulled over and offered me a ride and said, "It's too cold for you to walk." Well, I didn't know how cold it was. It might have been 30 below. I had no idea.
Yeah.
Got in the car. He dropped me off at the city hall. I walked the 4 blocks from city hall to school. And by the time I got to school, my ears were frostbitten. Ooh. So it was a cool morning. But, you know, there was no great uproar about it. It was just, you know, you got up and you dealt with the weather that the world brought you. And that was kind of how it was.
This is the part of the program where we sound really old, because I was thinking that too last week as schools were canceled because of the cold. And
yeah.
I thought, well, what happened when I was a kid? Like, you know, I couldn't check my phone. I never was aware of what the temperature was.
No.
Ever.
No.
And, you know, if we had radio on, maybe, if the TV was on, the TV wasn't about weather where I lived. You know, somewhere between Brainerd and Nisswa. They didn't have the temperature there. It just was a different sort of a thing. And then maybe, you know, then you didn't pay as much attention to it. It didn't seem as big a deal. I was just thinking about, like, did we do activities? Did they cancel stuff? I don't remember that kind of thing, you know?
I think they probably let us stay in.
Yeah.
But that is for recess and for lunch hour. Mm-hmm. But pretty much, you know, we just dealt with it. We had no inclination that it was going to be 30 below in the morning. We just knew that it was going to be morning in the morning, and you got up and did what you did the day before, which was get dressed and go to school.
Well, it's a different, yeah, it's a different time. We'll stop our old commentary. How's that?
Read to me from the weather report.
We all know what time.
What does it say? Well, I heard you mention this morning that warm weather was coming, and then you said it's going to be 4 above, and I thought, that'll bring a laugh.
I know.
You know, I mean, here we are. We're like, it's going to be 4 above. And we're like, yeah, that'll be nice. Wow. And somebody down in, like, Iowa or Missouri is going to hear 4 above, and they're going to be like, you can't even go outside when it's that cold.
I know. I think that's why I do it. We know we have lots of listeners from other places and from warm places, yeah. And we've gotten feedback over the years, like, they sort of secretly like to hear that weather forecast.
Yeah.
And I, you know, today felt much warmer to me coming out than yesterday morning did. But here's what we're seeing in the current temperatures. We've got 8 below in Park Rapids and in Bemidji, Hibbing at 7 below, so is Grand Rapids, 4 below right now in Brainerd, and Embarrass at 8 below. Coldest so far I'm seeing is 9 below. And for the rest of the day, it looks like we could see some snow and flurries, a high 0 to 6 above. Tonight, minus 9 to minus 16. Wind chill values between 13 and 25 below. Mostly sunny and cold for tomorrow. Wednesday, high 0 to 5. Evening lows 11 to 17 below. I'm still not really hearing a warm-up here. And then even colder in the evening on Thursday night, getting down to the 20 below 0. Mid-teens to 20 below zero. So it's coming. I have heard news that on the weekend there will be, like, some of the area snow ski hills will be open. They were closed all last weekend. So fingers crossed we might be able to get outside a little more. We can.
Yeah. It's always up to you. Well, at our house, it was up to our mother. Mm-hmm. Get outside now.
Yeah. Everything up to the mother, right? For sure.
Yeah. Mom said, you kids need to go outside. We gathered our stuff and went out the door.
We've got a lot going on for you this morning, including what's up next. It is National Native News, and they are reporting on how tribes in Minnesota are expressing condolences to the family of 37-year-old Alex Preddy, who was fatally shot over the weekend by ICE agents in Minneapolis. Especially a Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe condolence and statement that they put out. We'll hear that story coming up next. And then we've got some haikus for our morning.
Yes.
I'm excited about that.
Yeah, yeah. I read through them and was pretty entertained. Some of them are very phenology related.
Yes, they are. I'm just going to sneak one of them, okay?
Go ahead.
Winter by Evelyn. All I see is white, no brown, no green, no delight. We've all got frostbite. See, that one's for you.
Perfect.
From your youth.
Yeah.
Coming up at 9 o'clock this morning, we bring you Headwaters with your host, DJ Dang.
Support for KAXE comes from Woodworks Homes, dedicated to the art of building in northern Minnesota by constructing handcrafted new homes and offering remodeling services. More at woodworksmn.com.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Tribes are among those expressing condolences to the family of 37-year-old Alex Preddy, who was fatally shot over the weekend by federal agents in Minneapolis. Tribes are also raising concerns for their citizens in the Twin Cities as the Trump administration's immigration actions continue in Minnesota. In a statement, the Mille Lacs Band offered condolences and said it's standing in solidarity with its band members and other Minneapolis residents. Tribal leaders are urging their members to carry tribal IDs and report any ICE interactions to the tribe as leaders meet with federal, state, and local officials. The Spirit Lake Nation, Crow Creek Sioux Tribe, Sisseton Wahpeton Oyate, Rosebud Sioux Tribe, and Standing Rock Sioux Tribe issued a joint statement expressing condolences and said they stand in solidarity with Minnesota communities. The tribes say recent federal actions in Minnesota include the taking of a Sisseton Wahpeton Oyate member, but they did not provide additional information. The tribes say leaders are in contact with federal agencies, and they're urging tribal citizens to prioritize safety. A teacher who was convicted of sexually abusing Hopi boys for nearly a decade was recently denied parole after the tribe and the U.S. Attorney for Arizona sent a letter opposing his release. KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio reports.
John Boone was hired as a teacher in 1979 at a Hopi school run by the Bureau of Indian Affairs. In 1987, the FBI found photos and videotapes of 142 nude boys at his home, and Boone was sentenced to life in prison.
His name is still widely known on the reservation, even though it's been close to 40 years. We still continue to suffer to this day.
That's Hopi Chairman Lamar Kivema.
Unfortunately, we've lost some, either to suicide or to alcohol or substance abuse. Nothing will ever make up for what was done. It's an open wound that'll never go away.
U.S. Attorney Timothy Corchain has watched this case closely, even sending a letter to the U.S. Parole Commission in tandem with Hopi leadership.
And with the understanding that that federal special trust responsibility doesn't end at the sentencing.
Corchain also credits his tribal liaison, Kyoko Patterson, who is Navajo, for paying close attention.
She really stays on this for us.
The U.S. agreed to pay $13 million to 58 victims. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
For the first time in 40 years, a Native person is wearing the crown of Miss Rodeo, North Dakota. Brian Bull of Buffalo's Fire has the story.
24-year-old Jalen Hicks of Dunn Center scored highest in the categories of horsemanship, appearance, and personality. She's competed twice before, but persevered and will now travel the rodeo circuit across the country. Hicks is one-quarter French-Canadian Chippewa of the Turtle Mountain Band. The last known Native rodeo queens were Janet Voigt in 1986 and Audrey Hall in 1954. Both were with the three affiliated tribes, Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara. Hicks says she's happy to continue this representation.
I love the fact that Native American culture has such a heavy influence on the Western industry, whether you want to look at the horsemanship, the jewelry, we see such a big influence, the leather work, the fringe we wear on our jackets, that's all from Native American culture.
Hicks was declared Miss Rodeo North Dakota last year and was formally coronated earlier this month. Besides educating people about rodeo culture and the Western industry, Hicks will also promote awareness of Angel Man Syndrome, a genetic condition that affects her niece, Sissy. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Working long hours is the devil's curse. Things are getting tight, but it could be worse. She tries hard to ignore the news. Nothing makes sense and she gets confused. Between what is false and what is true, she worries they won't get through. Forget our troubles.
That is our album of the week, the unmistakable voice there of Lucinda Williams. She's got a brand new album out. It's called World's Gone Wrong, and we just heard the title song. It is original songs written by Williams and a cover of Bob Marley and the Wailers' So Much Trouble in the World featuring Mavis Staples. Lucinda's now 72. She's a stroke survivor, and she has written protest songs that meet the moment that we are in. It's her 16th album out. And you can find more information, and you'll hear it throughout our programming. Find more info at kaxe.org.
Programming is supported by Grand Dental Center, where Doctors Lisa Johnson, Leanna McBride, and their staff provide full-service family dental care for patients of all ages in Grand Rapids and surrounding communities. More information at granddentalcenter.com.
Check out our webpage, kaxe.org. The top story is the latest news from our region. It is a photos and a story by Chelsea Perkins about a vigil on Saturday at the Crow Wing County Jail in Brainerd, where there are over 40 ICE detainees. They, our news team, if you have any news tips, we want you to send them our way. You can email news@kaxe.org.
We receive support from Minnesota Power, an elite company envisioning a carbon-free future through their energy-forward strategy. More at mnpower.com/energyforward. It's time now for our student talkbacks. Our phenology talkbacks are funded in part by the Minnesota Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. Phenology talkbacks are produced by Charlie Mitchell. Our first report comes from Lee Jackson and Darcy Rolfe's classes at the North Shore Community School near Duluth.
Hello from the North Shore Community School on the North Shore of Lake Superior. My name is Gavin, and I am your phenologist for this week. On Friday, January 16th and Saturday, January 17th, we accumulated 5 to 6 inches of light and fluffy snow. On the morning of Monday, January 19th, Duluth recorded a negative 41-degree wind chill. Frostbite can set in within 5 to 10 minutes. Many students reported seeing sea smoke on Lake Superior. Sea smoke occurs when air temperature is much colder than the water temperature. On Tuesday, January 20th, the ice coverage for Lake Superior was recorded at 10%. Also, by the end of this week, our area will experience the coldest air since 2021. On Sunday, January 28th, Ms. Urban noticed flocks of ducks on Lake Superior, including the common golden eyes and red-breasted mergansers. On Monday, January 19th, brought several female pine grosbeaks to Ms. Rolfe's neighbor's bird feeder, along with three bright red males. On Tuesday, January 20th, Ms. Young's class saw small tunnels in the snow, with large feather-shaped ice crystals forming at the openings. The crystals tell us that small animals are living under the snow in that spot. As they breathe, the warm air from their breath rises until it passes through a hole in the snow. Their warm air cools as it exits the protection of the holes. As the moisture of the creature's breath condenses in to create feather-shaped ice crystals. On Wednesday, January 21st, Ms. Helgeson's class saw signs of active snowshoe hares in the Bunny restaurant. They noticed scat, bite marks, and tracks leading toward their restaurant. Also on Wednesday, Ms. Markhound's class found lots of evidence of active snowshoe hare. They found three sticks completely nibbled with no bark left. Ms. Markhound's kindergarten class started measuring the snowbank outside their classroom window on Tuesday, January 20th. It measured 72.5 inches tall. It's there measuring an L-shaped corner. This makes the perfect spot for a place to snow to pile higher and higher as they're mostly protected from the wind. On Wednesday, January 21st, a rare winter phenomenon was spotted over Lake Superior, a cold air winter funnel. This occurs when a narrow, weak vortex forms over the cold air and meets the ground warm air, often due to a polar vortex or high-pressure system funneling. Arctic air south. This indicates that Lake Superior is much warmer than the air temperature. This report is being recorded on Thursday, January 22nd, instead of Friday, January 23rd. There's a high probability that school will be canceled tomorrow due to extreme cold temperatures and wind chill forecasts of -40 to -50 degrees for this evening and Friday morning. Stay safe and stay warm. This concludes the phrenology report. Have a great week and be observant.
Thank you, Gavin. What a nice report. I just am amazed at how the details that those students can research. The idea of a cold air vortex above Lake Superior, and then what physically caused such a thing. And they went into that, and they figured it out. And they did it, the ice crystals at the mouths of the little snow tunnels. And I've seen those myself. If you get down and look at those little holes, you'll see that right at the openings, especially if the vole hasn't been in and out recently, there are these lovely little ice crystals that form that are just gorgeous. And the fact that the students are aware of that and then they think of the physical reasons for that to occur is absolutely just what I hope to have every kid do and learn. It really puts them in the moment. I think it's just wonderful. Down on the Lake Superior, common golden eyes, red-breasted mergansers, Miss Rolfe's female and male pine grosbeaks at their feeders. That's really quite nice. I would love to be around to see that. And I like the way the kids are measuring the snowbank outside their classroom window. And the physics that the sixth graders went into to, again, figure out why the snow would be 72 inches deep right there, a little L-shaped alcove in the building. So just a wonderful report. Great, great work. Thank you. Our next report comes from Minnesota Master Naturalist class at the Long Lake Conservation Center near Palisade.
Hey, this is Ray.
George.
And Jake.
We're here at the Long Lake Conservation Center for the 2026 training of Northwoods Great Lakes, Minnesota Master Naturalist Program. We've been here since January 17th up till today, January 21st.
We had some real winter weather here with a low of -17 and a high of 18 over the course of our 5 days. We had a mix of cloudy and clear nights, and it snowed multiple days and nights while we were here. On January 19th, we spotted a sundog, and that night, a few of us saw faint northern lights. We also saw many bright stars, including about half a dozen shooting stars.
Most mammals are not very active at this time of year. They're either hibernating or otherwise reducing their activity, but we did see lots of deer, as well as their tracks and the places they've been bedding down for the night, and we saw red squirrels and eastern gray squirrels. We also saw signs of some other animals that we didn't observe directly. We saw coyote tracks, rabbit tracks, various kinds of squirrel tracks, We saw tracks from mice and other small rodents. We saw tracks from deer, and we saw trees that beaver have been chewing on. We also saw scat, that's poop, from grouse, deer, and coyote.
We've also seen a plethora of birds while we've been here. We've seen the ruffed grouse, the black-capped chickadee, red-bellied woodpecker, hairy woodpecker, the white-breasted nuthatch, brown creeper, bald eagle, a raven that stole a pancake, and a snowy owl. We saw a lot of plants while we were here. Some that are here all year round, including tamarack, alder, and black spruce. We saw some witch's broom and lots of lichen and galls, including green shield lichen. Over in the bog, we saw some cotton grass, Labrador tea, bog rosemary, leather leaf, and a lot of sphagnum. We also saw some dormant plants in the bog, including pitcher plant and pink lady slipper.
That's it for Phenology. We've had a wonderful time here, and we hope you all get the chance to unplug, get outside, and
live connected.
Thank you, gang. That was Ray, George, and Jake, and they are master naturalist trainees at the Long Lake Conservation Center. Lots of tracks that they saw. They had some opportunities to see a few northern lights. They got out of there just about the time the really cold weather arrived. They saw trees that the beavers had been chewing on. That would have had to been a bit older than just recent, because the beavers are right now, they are in an ice-covered pond or lake and not really getting out. They're pretty much under the ice. They've stored away enough food, hopefully, to keep them alive through the winter, and they'll probably just hang out inside their lodge with a bunch of other beavers and maybe a muskrat or two, and just kind of be waiting for warmer weather and for the ice to melt. A nice report from that crowd as well.
We will have more talkbacks for you in about an hour, and we'll also be bringing you throughout our morning some of the haikus from one of our classrooms that the students wrote. And you can catch up, of course, on Phenology. Here's a cool way. If you want to learn a lot more, sign up for that Season Watch newsletter or listen to the Season Watch podcast besides Tuesdays.
Been listening. I took in the podcast this week and enjoyed it very much. Lots of great things going on there. Entertaining way to kind of just pass a little time. I put it on my my headphones. I have these. They are headphones because they go on my head, but they don't go in my ears. They fit sort of in front of my ears.
Oh, okay.
So yeah. The sound comes in through, I suppose, the bones of my jaw, but but I hear it just fine.
Sure.
At the same time, my ears are unobstructed, so if there's something more interesting,
there you go.
The wind through the raven's wings, or the call of a blue jay calling me out for invading his territory. It's all still there, so I do enjoy that very much.
Okay, good to hear, because you were the one that pushed me to not, when I'm out in the woods, I don't need to listen to a book as I'm walking out there. I can actually listen to what's going on and maybe slow down a little bit.
Yeah, I like listening to books, but I usually try to do it when I'm in the car, because there's, less to hear. All you can hear is the wind rushing by. We receive support.